And now a message from the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
American citizens, this is your president speaking. I want to talk to you today about protecting the institution of marriage. It's important. The Bible says love your neighbor. But that's wrong. You can love your neighbor, but not in a beehive. You gays, you shouldn't be getting married. The way I see it, you gays ought to be having a lot of anonymous group sex in public baths, prancing around naked in highway rest stop bathrooms all across the country. That's the proper role of homosexuals in a civilized society. Glory holes. More glory holes would be a positive development for a gays America. See, gays should not be committed to just one person. Gay marriage will destroy the tradition of closeted gay sex in America. And that's wrong. Gays should be screwing everything in sight. Just one hole after another. Bang, 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 bang down the line. You legalize gay marriage in this country, all that's going to come to an end. And that'll be a tragic day for America. I don't believe it's the proper role of government to promote responsible monogamous sex. I think when it comes to homosexuality, we want slutty midnight bacchanalias, lavish costume sex shows. I'm talking about anything goes, is the way I look at it. Jobs, jobs, and jobs in parking lots with total strangers. May the good Lord bless you and keep you.
Part of that broadcaster's dinner last night?
From the White House press correspondent's dinner.
Well, at least I got her what she felt about it. Why, hello there. It's 3 minutes and 18 seconds after the hour of 11, and it's the month of March of the year of our Lord 2007. Thank you for coming by, making it part of your listening day. Live in the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio. This, my friends, you're on my microphone. Hold on. There we go. This, my friends, is the Rick Emerson radio program. I am he. Thank you for coming along today. We appreciate your presence and your patronage. It is Thursday, and welcome to Day 12. It's 503-733-2970, 503-733-2970, 503-733-2970. You'd like to engage with us electronically speaking via a series of ones and zeros and tubes and webs and whatnot. You can do that as well. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Rick@rickemerson.com. Your clarifications, your conventions, your 2 cents, your corrections, your what have you. 503-733-2970. You can also email it. It's rick@rickemerson.com.
All right. I don't even know where to start today.
Because I was only halfway through. I was writing out a list of things that I was going to forward promote.
I didn't even get
finished with that, and then we had to start. It seems like the show, two things are happening. One, it seems like the show is starting earlier and earlier every day. I swear to God, there are days when I get out of bed, and I feel like I've only barely put my feet on the floor, and the socks have barely gone over my toes, and I'm already in here starting. And then once we're in here, it seems like we're only here about 5 minutes and things are done. So it was yesterday. Yesterday, a four-hour freaking radio program went by in about 12 minutes. So, all right. Well, coming up today, CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard will join us today. We will talk about, the correspondent's dinner. I think it was a year ago. I don't know if they have this at the same time every year. It is an annual dinner. I'm unclear about whether they have it at the same time every year. The only reason I bring this up is because I'm pretty sure that the last time they had that, no one cares about this, but I do. The last time they had a correspondent, in my quest just to be a pale imitation of Don Imus. The last time they had the correspondent's dinner for the White House, Lisa Goddard and I were talking about how what a CF it had been the previous year, what it's just a gigantic cluster F it had been with Stephen Colbert, and how last year they had somebody that was toothless. And then we were talking about the fact that they were getting Rich Little for this one. But maybe I'm thinking about something entirely different. Is it possible that this is a different dinner that they had Rich Little at? Does anybody know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
All right. Was Rich Little there last night?
I see no mention of Rich Little.
I don't even know if he's still alive. Is he capable of telling jokes? He can only imitate dead celebrities now.
Talk about what LBJ said last night.
By imitate, I just mean he remains silent. With occasionally like a muffled knock.
And the more we talk about him,
eventually he'll make a guest appearance and we'll get to sponsor it. That's usually the way it goes, isn't it?
We'll get to introduce him at the Aladdin.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
And there'll be a picture of us standing backstage, Tim resplendent in a tuxedo and me in an ill-fitting AM970 shirt, looking overweight and paunchy as I stand next to a withered celebrity.
Have you seen that photograph? Did I show you that photograph of you and me with Conway and Corman?
Yeah, that's a good photograph.
Yeah, it's
I like it.
Of course you like it. You look fantastic. It's a good photograph of everybody but me.
No, you look fine.
I don't look fine.
Considering the amount of light that was surrounding
me. The amount of hair on my head, the amount of fat on my body. Nobody noticed but you. And I notice every... And the thing is, I don't have... A couple months ago, Tim Conway and Harvey Korman, and it still seems bizarre that that happened. Even now, I can't really quite wrap my mind around the fact that we did that. But Tim Conway and Harvey Korman performed at the Schnitzer, and it was sold out, 3,000 people. It was sold out crowd of the Schnitzer. Tim and I went and met them backstage with some listeners and winners, and then we introduced them on stage, and we got a photo taken in which Tim looks great. Conway looks fantastic. Tim Conway looks... I don't know if he's had work done or if it's just clean living or luck of the genetic draw. That guy looks great. Harvey Korman looks less so. He sort of looks like a real pale cigar store Indian. Just a lot of deep lines. It looks like he might snap in half at any moment. He was great on stage. But those guys, they're rocking the tuxes. And the thing is, when you're an old guy in tux somehow becomes fantastic. I don't know what that is. It's like the tuxedo.
Don Rickles.
Exactly. The older you get, the better the tuxedo, the greater the difference, the more exponential the gain in your aesthetic appearance when you put on a tuxedo. I don't know that's all
the
about.
Better the tux, the greater the entertainer.
Isn't that true?
I think so.
So there's this picture of Tim Conway and Harvey Korman and Tim all looking great. And then there's me, and it's just, and it was like two, 3 months maybe after I'd had the medical hair thing done. My hair's all, so I got the buzz cut. I got the private pile haircut going on. And then I'm all chunky, you know, not unlike I am now today. And then I got the really like ill-fitting, like the tight black station t-shirt. Thank God it was black at least. Thank God it was somewhat of a slimming color. And God love him, but one of our listeners, this listener Royal, took the photograph. And I'm glad he did because we didn't think to bring a camera, so we had nothing. So he took it. But it wasn't really time to do a second shot. And I happened to, I don't know if I was blinking or I was just jerking spasmodically or something while they took the photograph. So Tim Riley looks great. Tim Conway looks great. Harvey Korman looks great backstage. I am this sort of amorphous, balding blur of a person.
Well, that's the scary thing when you meet a celebrity. It's like you have to get that one picture perfect.
Oh, no. And
the pressure's on.
This is the pressure ease of it. I have no choice. It's the only photograph I can display because there are no other extant photos. And they'll be dead within like a day. So there'll be no other chance for me to get photographs with them. I'm not bitter. Anywho, so we'll talk to Lisa Goddard about this correspondence dinner, which has, and I really have to say this, I know I'm jumping ahead a little bit here, but we're going to talk to Lisa Goddard today. We'll talk about the correspondence dinner. We'll find out, for the love of sweet God Almighty, whether or not it was Rich Little or Stephen Colbert, just so I can quit thinking about this. George Bush told some truly awful jokes, and then I have... we were just talking about how tuxes make you look cool. I have... the single most horrifying piece of audio. I mean, this may be the worst thing we've ever played, and we've played a lot of bad things. We've played a lot of terrible, cringe-inducing, soul-blackening songs on this radio program. I have what may be the single worst 120 seconds of audio ever to be played on this radio program. And you have to believe me on this. You have to trust me when I say that as horrifying as the audio is, it's like 1,000 times worse if you're watching the video that goes along with the song. And I'll try to post a link to it on the blog on rickemerson.com so you can see it. It was so bad. And I don't mean to over-tease this and then under-deliver later on, as they say, but we're going to play the worst song you've ever heard later. It was so bad
that as I was recording it into the system this morning, I actually had to stop at one point and leave and, like, go to the kitchen and sort of shake it off and come back and, like, try to muscle all the way through it. Because I did, somebody sent it to me this morning that I had to, blah, 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 I had to change the file format so it would play on the computer in here. So I'm busy recording this worst song you've ever heard into the system this morning. Sitting there and playing it in, and I got about 40 seconds in, and I swear to Christ, I had to just stop it. I had to turn off the recording, and I got up from my desk, and I sort of walked into the kitchen doing kind of a thing. And I had a cup of coffee, and I just had to sort of clear. It's like I would imagine it's like when you're going to get a tooth yanked out or maybe have some sort of unpleasant proctology examination. Well, you just have to really put yourself, you have to get your head in the game. You have to put on your game face and just buckle down and just bite the bullet and do it. That's how bad this song is. So, anyway, so we'll do that. Steve Kassenbaum is going to join us from New York City today. We're going to talk about Rudy Giuliani being endorsed. Of all the useless people you could think to be endorsed by, Steve Forbes, I barely even remember who he is. All I remember is he had a big... Is he Malcolm Forbes' kid? That can't be possible. I don't think Malcolm Forbes had children.
I'm not sure.
Is there some relationship?
He's on the pecking order.
But he is of the Malcolm Forbes's.
The rich Forbes is.
He's of the magazine,
yes.
Right? Okay. And Forbes magazine was founded by Malcolm Forbes, wasn't it?
Yes.
I'm not entirely sure that Malcolm Forbes was the child-having type. I mean, in as much as having sons and daughters, anyway. I'm not entirely sure about that. Well, whatever. It's more so I can make fun of Steve for just screwing us yesterday and not showing up. What else do we have? We'll try to get to this top five today. We have a little bit of good news about a band that we are partial to here on the Rick Emerson Show. And John Kerry is coming to town in case you're...
And Teresa Heinz.
I'm sorry. Not just John Kerry. It's two.
Oh, the dynamic
for
duo.
For the price of two. John Kerry and Teresa Heinz Kerry. They've written a book about the environment. Senator John Kerry, you know he's already looking at 2012. You know it. You know it in your black little heart. You know it's true.
Does he have a slideshow, though?
Probably.
Just doesn't do it.
Probably. It's going to be in the bank. $26. $26 that you do get to look at his wife, who seems drunk, even if she's not. All right, 503-733-2970. Let's see. Kristen Bowie, who is in for Scotty J today, said, "You're talking about John Kerry? Yeah, he's already let us down once. Why does he have to keep rubbing it in? I would rather buy malt liquor at the Plaid Pantry than watch John Kerry speak." You can buy a lot of malt liquor at the Plaid Pantry for $26, too. That really is true. We've also got news about Rick Emerson Listener Party 10. Today, by the way, is the drop dead day. Today, by the end of today's program, if we do not have a better name, I'm not saying that the name yesterday... The reason I'm mentioning this is because we got a phone call. Some guy's calling up about this. And there's this whole sort of flame war that's erupted on my MySpace page about it. But we had a guy who called up yesterday and said, blah, 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 it's the 10th party. It's kind of a history of the show sort of a theme. Why don't you call it Emerson History X? Which we thought was great. It's a great name. The logo sort of suggests itself. It flows, linguistically speaking. And then some whole dispute erupted about who came up with the name first, and some guy claiming he MySpaced me about it, and another guy claiming he emailed it to me, some other guy claiming that he's the one who came up with it because he called in. We do have a little bit of news about the party itself, but today is the final day for name submissions. Rick Emerson Listener Party 10 is coming up April 19th. That is Thursday, April 19th, 7 p.m. Barracuda. Today is the final day we are taking name submissions. At the end of today's program, we will select the official name of Rick Emerson Listener Party 10. If you got suggestions, this is the final day to get them in. Let's get a couple of these calls, then we'll do introductions all around and then so forth. Alexander, hello, sir.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Hi. Hey, I'm going to Al Gore this, Era 2000. I'm the guy that called up and said Emerson History X.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dominic called up and said, it was me and... all that stuff.
Well, here's what happened. So we were doing the show yesterday. You called up, and you're like, yeah, I got this great idea for a name. It's Emerson History X. We're like, that's a fantastic name. Right. And like 0.55 seconds later, phone rings. This guy Dominic calls up and just uncorks just a vial of hate all over you about how he had come up with these, like, well, I sent you that name like a month ago via MySpace. Here's the best thing about it. If you go to my MySpace comments section, he actually took the time to go back, find his outgoing message to me, capture it as a screenshot, save it as a JPEG, and then post it on my MySpace page. He also sent it to me with a whole series of crude comments about you and your lineage. There does appear to be some sort of empirical proof that he came up with the Emerson History X name like 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Well, I'm going to take the high ground on the calling names part and not call him any more names. And just admit that, hey, yeah, okay, you've got some proof. Looks like a good screenshot.
Yeah, he had a whole series of suggestions for things that you could smoke if you disagreed with him.
Tell him that I'm not of that persuasion, and that's okay for his lifestyle, but, you know, I'm...
It's mighty white of you. Okay. All right, so you are conceding, then.
I am honorably conceding. You can probably soon be picking up a... ticket to my slideshow on the environment and how we're all going to be underwater by 2009.
Wait, can you hold on just a second?
Yep.
Yeah.
Does it ever get old for you?
No one doesn't. That's too bad. We seem to have lost you. Taking that call was a colossal mistake. 503-733-2970. We'll get a couple more here, and then we'll do the introductions. We'll talk about what's coming up in the news. We'll break Lisa Goddard, all that coming up later on in the hour. Roger, hi there.
Hey, Rick, how you doing?
What's up?
Hey, this is the listener party. How about, I know you don't care for the movie, but Tenacious E. For Emerson. Tenacious E.
Here's the great thing. Okay, let me just say this. Here's the great thing about calling it the 10th listener party Tenacious E. It's great, but it's too ambitious. You know what I mean? It's almost a little too smart. You're working a little too hard there. we really try to aim a little lower, and the key to the success of this radio program is lack of subtlety. The key here is just to be big and dumb and obvious. That's really what we found works for us as a radio program.
I appreciate you giving it a thought, sir.
Okay. Thank you, my friend. You call us anytime.
Bye now.
Okay, bye now. All right. We are joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. How are you doing today?
I'm good.
You saw that, what's her name, Lily Allen last night.
I thought she was amazing.
Was she drunk?
She was wasted.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, it was so good. And I actually bumped into Dave Zinn.
Really? Dave Zinn?
Mm-hmm.
The gatekeeper? He gave me a copy of that Lily Allen CD. She's the one that the smile song, I smile because you're an ass, or I smile because you're unhappy.
Yeah. And when I see you cry, it makes me smile.
That song, I can't really listen to that song. It sort of scares me. It kind of unnerves me a little bit.
Dude, she got up there, like, no bra, orange. My theory is that she's the Ani DiFranco for a new millennium, or for a new decade.
Okay.
So she gets up there, like, she's, you know, orange tank top, just rocking it. She looks so cute. But she's just completely comfortable with herself, slugging.
Is she hot? I don't think I've ever seen her.
Yeah, she's very cute.
Really?
Yeah, you'd like her a lot.
Excellent.
I'll find you a picture.
Is she my type, Sarah?
And she is your type, actually.
Okay.
And she also had a little servant boy that would come out and bring her lit cigarettes.
Fantastic.
Which I really want Scotty J to do for me.
I think we found an exciting new position for Scotty when he returns to town. All right, great. And she is not, we were talking about this yesterday, Lily Allen, who, and that's a big hit, right, that single?
Yeah, it was.
The Smile song?
Bigger in the UK, not so much here.
She's got a filthy mouth, though, which I don't care. It's fine with me. So I find it kind of hot, actually. But I read an interview with her, and she just seems drunk and crazy. And maybe it's a shtick, I don't know. She seems a little unstable. That, and then what's her name? Is it Emily Winehouse? Is that her name?
Amy
Winehouse. That's another person. Lar was playing something to her the other day. Boy, that's just...
She has a beautiful voice.
A lot of weird music coming out right now. I don't know. It's either a good time in music or a terrible time in music.
Do you want to see a picture of Lily?
Yes, I do. Wait, hold on. Let me walk over here. All right.
Here we go. She's adorable.
All right.
Bigger.
All right, hold on.
You can get the full effect.
And so she was where? She was at the Aladdin?
She was at the Aladdin.
She's British, right?
Yeah, and she lost her... She was so drunk when she got on stage, she actually had lost her belt.
Oh, hello.
Her pants were rolled up at the...
Fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I like her. She looks like a naughty girl.
And her hair back in a ponytail, and these like enormous hoop earrings, and just did not give a crap.
Excellent.
Yeah, it was great.
All right. Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification today.
Well, the Oregon House has approved a bill to make it mandatory for Mount Hood climbers to carry a locating beacon.
Not damn right.
The president pokes fun at himself during a broadcaster's dinner, but remains firm he'll veto any timetable for a withdrawal from Iraq. Uh-oh, looks like Rudy Giuliani has the edge over Hillary in the latest polls, and Bono is knighted. Now he'll even become worse to stomach.
I was just going to say, really, like, that's the last thing we needed at this point. And don't you assume that in his head he just considers himself a knight anyway? You know what I mean?
Yes.
I don't need to be a knight of your empire. I'm a knight of the world. Or whatever. He would just say some, you know, I don't even know what he would say. I'm going to try not to think about it for a while. All right, it's 503-733-2970. This is the part of the show where I would normally talk about other things and stuff and what I did last night, but I don't even really remember. It's all kind of a blur, and I got to get to these calls and so forth. Except to say this, can we mention the fact that you're moving out of your house?
Oh. I haven't signed the papers yet.
Okay. But you are going to be moving out.
Yes.
All right.
Into a rad apartment.
Let me just say this. I will save my comments about your current roommates until you've moved out.
Why? What's wrong with them?
They can keep all your earthly belongings. They rummage through your underwear when you're not at home.
No.
You can't do this.
I can't live in a jail cell anymore. I can't live... seriously, I live in a 10 by 10...
I can't say it. I can't make any observations.
I'm not saying the house is like a jail. What I'm saying is I can't... All my possessions have to be in my room all the time, and my room is only 10 feet by 10 feet, and I have a full-size bed.
So it's a minimum security prison.
Seriously.
It's a white-collar. It's a white-collar prison.
Literally, I'm walking on my clothes. Like, I can't walk around in my room. But anyway, moving into this place, it's huge. It's on Hawthorne. It has a backyard for the little Muppet to run around, and I have a back porch.
I just have this image of you sitting on the edge of a sad little bed that's bolted to a wall, slowly over many years carving a chest set out of soapstone.
I almost twisted my ankle this morning because I was trying to walk on this mound of clothes that don't fit into my closet anymore.
Fantastic. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Well, let's get through this bank of calls, and then we'll... I just don't know how to handle this. Let's get to this bank of calls, then we'll play... I'm going to go ahead and play this terrible song at the outset, because I want to be able to ask Lisa Goddard about it. And you have some snippets of this, but Tim, isn't that right, the road thing?
Yes.
Have you seen the video that goes with it?
I haven't as of yet.
Oh, God damn. It's so bad. It will haunt your dreams. You will never be the same after watching this. Let's just get a couple of these. Everybody take a drink. For the love of God. Josh, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
How about the Emerson Party 10? And I'm effing you tonight.
Okay, that is pretty funny. That is.
I liked it.
For those who don't know, that's a phrase apparently actually uttered by Scotty J to a woman that he was attempting to seduce with his manly wiles at one point. All right. Excellent.
Love it. Thanks, Rick.
Thank you, sir. All right. Ken, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Hey, two suggestions for the listening party show.
Yes, sir.
The Chronicles of Emerson or the Emerson Chronicles?
Chronicles of Emerson. There's something there. Somebody suggested Lord of the Drinks. That's actually not so bad.
Yeah, it just kind of brings in Vin Diesel and the Chronicles of Riddick or whatever it was.
Chronicles of Riddick. Okay, let's all stop.
Thank you, sir.
All right. One final call, then we'll play this terrible song. I think this might actually be the guy who took that photo, Tim, of us with Tim Conway and Harvey Korman. Royal?
Oh, yeah. It is the guy that took that photo. How you doing?
Hi, sir. How you doing?
I'm surviving. I wanted to apologize. I know the photo was terrible.
No.
I can't...
The photo is fine of everybody if you're not me. I am the only one in the photograph. I am the least photogenic person on earth. The photo of, like, Tim looks great. Tim Conway looks great. Harvey Korman looks great. It looked like a big ass is what I look like.
No, I appreciate you trying to spare my feelings.
It's not that bad. If it makes you feel any better, mine turned out all blurry.
Yeah, okay. Well, there you go. So at least I'm not suffering alone. It's just, and I've got this sort of, how do I put this? I really should have this photo on display at the listener party. When we do a listener party 10, because it is sort of a history of the Rick Emerson Show kind of a thing, I'll put this photo there so everybody can see what I'm looking about. But I have this smile on my face. I do look like one of God's lesser creations. I look like one of the helmet-wearing kids. There's just no getting around it. My smile is just sort of, it's the smile of a man who maybe is good natured, but who was kicked in the head at an early age and who never fully recovered. That's kind of what I look like. So, all right. But God bless you for taking it anyway, Royal.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. That's Royal. All right. It's 503-733-2970. All right. Let's see. Sarah, can you... I'm going to bring this up here. In a second, you'll have to drop the mono bed. All right, so this is... Okay, I'm going to play this here. This is some sound. This is from CBS News, by the way. And the only reason I'm playing this now is because I want to get it played, because Lisa Goddard is going to talk a little bit about this. Tim, this Rove sound... Now, do you know who... Does the news cut say who else this is other than Karl Rove? There was like a wraparound bit of text or something for it. And if not, I don't even really know myself. It looks like David Gregory from the White House press corps lurking in the background there.
Let's see, Brad Sherwood, of whose line is it anyway?
Oh God, is that what they replaced Stephen Colbert with? A guy from whose line is it anyway?
Apparently, so this is the Radio and Television Correspondents' Dinner.
So terrible. It's excruciating.
I haven't heard any of this.
Well, here's the thing, Sarah. So once a year, the White House gets together, and it's George Bush and his lackeys, in this case, Karl Rove, who is the architect and so forth.
So this is the one Stephen Colbert did it last year,
yeah,
and embarrassed everybody.
I'm pretty sure it's the same event, I think. It's sort of a Miss USA, Miss America thing, though. I get them all confused. But yeah, but it's George Bush and Karl Rove, and I don't think Dick Cheney was there, but blah, 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 blah. And then a bunch of TV reporters and radio reporters. And there's a lot of good-natured ribbing that goes on. Let me ask you this. We'll make this a fill-in-the-blank question, and then I'll play the answer here. So let's say you're a bunch of pasty, overfed, incredibly wealthy, powerful white men. What's the funniest thing you could possibly do on stage together? Oh, and by funny, I mean kooky and rib-tickling.
Are you asking?
Yeah.
Oh, pretending to be gay?
No. But that would have been, the judges would also accept that. Mm-hmm. You're really white.
Oh, some kind of rapping
thing? Yes, there you go.
Okay.
Yes, there
I'm
you
sorry
go.
That I didn't,
because there's nothing like a comedic shtick that got old in 1994. It's not, unless you're that ass from Cake. You should have gotten the memo by now. It's not funny. It's no longer sufficiently funny just to be a white guy holding a microphone and rapping. Like, that in and of itself, it no longer constitutes a joke. Unless you're these guys, in which it's so bad, it's so awful. So I'm going to play the audio here, and then I really cannot encourage you enough to go, and I'll post the video of this. Here's what you need to know. Everyone on this stage is about 70 years old. They're all fat.
Okay.
They're all white. The guy who's saying the words Karl Rove is, in fact, Karl Rove. They're all wearing tuxedos, and they look like penguins. Let me see if I can just give a little... This is CBS. I swear to God...
Now listen up, suckers. Don't get the jitters. But MC Rose says the heads off of critters.
MC
That's
Rose.
True. It's cruel to see. But
he's
gonna be about animal cruelty. He's a man. He's a treasure trove. But tell me, what is your name?
I'm MC Rose.
That's right. He can't be beat because he's so white from his head to his feet. But he will rap it when you give him a chance. Look at him move, doing a rapping dance. That's true. He's a dancing resident. He is the sidekick to the president. Keep going.
Your tax dollars paid for this, I think.
Way above, and tell me, what is your name?
MC Rose.
That's true. He's crossing his arms. He's rapping and a chilling and a showing his job.
Okay, here's the other thing you need to know. At this point, see what I mean?
God.
You see what I mean?
I rip my skin off.
You see, I had to leave the room at a certain point. I had to go to the kitchen and, like, work it off. I had to go walk it off, as the baseball players say, and come back and load it in again. The first time I tried to load this into the system, it was so bad, I couldn't do it. Here's what you need to know, by the way, at this point in the video, and everybody who grew up in the 80s will know what I'm saying. All of the white guys in the tuxedos, They're all, and Carl Rove among them, they're all striking the B-boy stance. And you know the B-boy stance, Sarah. That is the
leaning back, crossing your arms.
You seem like a bunch of gold rope.
No, because he actually referenced that in his rap. Yeah. Did you hear that?
Carl Rove striking the B-boy stance as embodied by LL Cool J on the front of his first record.
He will do it, but without fail. Get out his gun, because he's shooting quail. This man will never stop. Look at him jumping up and down around it to hop. He's got so much to prove, man. Tell me you never saw this man move. Doing the dance, the Carl Rove dance. Doing the dance, the Carl Rove dance.
Oh, at this point in the video, Carl Rove is doing like a...
My brain's shut off. I can't even do it.
It's
anymore.
Like he's doing like a swim kind of a dance. Yeah. So he's, sort of like he's doing the breaststroke or something.
Dancing and talking.
Now...
Oh,
let me ask you this. Now, what's the only thing that could make this worse? They're already rapping. Now, let's assume that you're white and friggin' lame. What is what is sort of related to rapping?
Breakdancing.
Well, that close. It's very close. It's a related activity. It is in the hip-hop oeuvre.
They do some kind of like hand sign.
Well, they do that. They strike the B-boy stance and all of that. I'll give you a hint. Fat Boy does it from KUFO.
He does it? Did they hug?
He does the thing that they're about to do here.
I don't know what that
is. Well, let's find out. This is at the White House correspondence dinner.
Oh,
doing the old beatbox.
Oh!
These are 60-year-old...
Oh, my God.
60-year-old white men.
You were such a helpful treasure trove. Tell me, what is your name?
MC Rove.
And see him later hanging in the cove. Tell me, what is your name?
MC Rove.
Moon June.
Doing it right, and he really strove. One more time, what's your name?
MC Rove.
Give it up for MC Rove in the house.
Yes. Oh, it burns. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, there you go. Fantastic. I chopped off the Katie Couric introduction to that, but other than that, that's the whole thing. There you go. It's 503-733-2970.
Let's just push the break.
You know, Grandmaster Flash is off killing himself somewhere. Yeah, totally. Yeah, exactly. We should take a break. We'll come. If you're on hold, please hang. Now I want to say everything in hip-hop slang. If you're on hold, stay there, please. You stay there. We'll come back. Lisa Goddard coming up around the corner. We'll talk to her about this freaking debacle of a correspondence dinner last night. What else? Coming up later on the AM 970 noon news hour, Steve Kastenbaum, top five, Jen Lane. Don't go anywhere. Whatever you say. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Rick, this email says, the phrase of the day that pays is, I want to rip my skin off. Well, what can you do? Oh, I should have come back with that. Hold on, let's see if I have it. Let's see if I have it racked up, as they say. Sarah, can you throw this to me over here? Before we welcome Lisa Goddard, this is a little...
Listen up, suckers, don't get the jitters. But MC Rose says heads off of critters. That's true, it's cruel to see. But he's gonna be about animal cruelty. He's a man, he's a treasure trove. But tell me, what is your name?
I'm MC Rose.
That's right.
Okay.
You can't be.
I can never play this again. Let's welcome now from the hill, CNN radio correspondent to the stars, Lisa Goddard. Hello there. How are you?
Hello. How are you?
I'm wanting to jab my ears out with something pointy and pretty. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm all right. The ringing in my ears has subsided, so we're on an equal plane.
Now, am I to understand? I didn't know this. Somebody told me that you were at the correspondence dinner.
Yes, I was at the dinner. You know, I don't go to the fancy dinners a lot, but that is one that I get a ticket to. I was in the back, but I had a good view of Roby, MC Rove.
Oh, good God. I have to just tell you, that's the most... we played that a couple times now, and I told people that it's horrifying. It really is cringe in inducingly awful, and I think I lack sufficient verbiage in my lexicon to describe exactly how terrible that is. As bad as it is.
Have you guys gone all the way to the end where, I mean, he's where he kind of gets this, at the very last one, he does this weird high pitch?
Oh, yeah, no, he does, and he does like a beatboxy thing. Wait, let me just play that, because I've got that.
Is somebody else doing the beatbox? I don't know. I don't know if he did that.
He does like an MC Rogue kind of a, I'll bring it up here. Hold on a second. And I'm not exaggerating. Let me see if I can find this here. It's right at the end. This makes me want to kill myself. No, it gets worse. I think he does it again.
Tell me what is your name? MC Rose. You can see him later hanging in the cove. Tell me what is your name? MC Rose. Doing it right and he really strove. One more time, what's your name?
MC Rose.
Give it up for MC Rose.
What's going on there?
It's almost kind of, it's again, it comes back to the Mrs. Doubtfire almost there.
Seriously, it's kind of a hello kind of a.
No! Wow, geez, what's going on with me? You guys take it. Forget it.
Let's forget that happened. Is this supposed to be some sort of Dadaist art piece, do you think?
Right, sound poetry?
Yeah, really. It is just one step away from like a bad Ginsberg sort of thing.
I'll tell you what. Indication from, you know, and because he was, Karl Rove was actually sitting at a CNN table.
Here comes the defense. Okay.
No, I'm just saying that apparently it really seemed that he did not know that was going to happen. And the president didn't look very happy about it as it was going down. But, you know, something happened in that man, in that white man's body. He got up there and told him, flail your arms, man. Now is the time. I don't know why.
The soul is in you and it's got to come out.
It's got to come out. This is your moment. You can do it. And, you know, I think it was the most hilarious thing I've seen. I know it cringes. It's like spikes in your abdomen to you hearing it. But honestly, come on. That's like Darth Vader getting up and doing that. Not the Karl Rove fans out there. I'm not saying that he is Darth Vader, but he has that. You just don't. He's not human in that he doesn't speak. We don't know anything about his personal life. He's sort of this character, the very flat character that lives in a behind closed doors. And here he was coming out in the open doing this. I think it was the most humanizing thing this administration has done in a long time. I don't know if it's going to be humanizing in a good way.
I'm just saying this. I've been telling people this morning. As bad as that sounds, and it does in fact sound not only like the worst music, but in fact the worst noise of any kind at all that I have ever heard. That it's so bad, but then it really just goes nuclear inside your head when you watch the video of it, where he's doing the thing where he leans back and he crosses his arms like he's LL Cool J. And
one of my friends is the NBC producer, the tall African American man who was brought up behind to be a backup dancer, I guess. And his name is Ken Strickland. And afterwards, he was just like, I really.
Let's be honest. Did he just go into a corner and weep for his culture?
Well, you know, I kind of wanted it to be like, you think they called you because they needed somebody with some kind of rhythm? You think that's why you got called up there?
Well, it's like the paciest, whitest gaggle of guys you've ever seen in your life. Somebody at some point must look like, come on, we need somebody else. Please help us.
And they fought him. And actually, and Ken, I said, Ken, you were getting it done. You were the only guy up there that really had any kind of rhythm. Jesus. You know, you fed the stereotype. So way to go. It's a good one for your people. So
I don't know if this is why other countries hate us or don't. I don't understand. This is just one of those things, though, where you remember how, like, television signals all get sent out into space, and eventually they will all be received by alien civilizations somewhere on the planet Zarknon 12. There is some life form that will eventually receive the image of Karl Rove striking a Brooklyn B-boy stance.
You know, I just want to say, I think I honestly enjoyed it. I thought it was hilarious. And but my moment of pause in that whole thing came at some point. I don't know if the camera did it. It must have been on camera. At some point, I got a good look because I was sitting underneath a ginormous screen where you could see everything. And I got a really good look of the back of his head.
Karl Rove?
Yeah, and how that hair is sort of matted down a little bit.
Oh, it's plastered into place. There's
I
no doubt about that.
It. Yeah, and that was sort of my only wow, whoa.
You would think, do you ever think this, though, when you see guys that are, I mean, I guess maybe he's just rich and powerful enough that he doesn't care whether he has hair or not, but I always do look at guys like that, and I'm like, you know, you got all of this clout and all of this pull, as they say. You'd figure that you could find something better than a Kobe. You figure when you get to be that rich, they take you into a secret room and they give you the option, you know, to get rid of the comb over and do something a little bit better. But, you know, what are you going to do?
You know, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is with those guys.
That's the humanizing.
Donald Trump? I don't know if they just are like,
I don't know. Now, was this, and I'm confused about this, was this the dinner that they were allegedly going to be having Rich Little at?
No.
Was that the White House press?
That's the White House. That's one that I will not personally be able to give you
All right, so I'm conflating the two then.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, it's okay. It's a, you know, it's. You do.
All right, okay. So, real quickly, and I just not to just get all serious about it, but I actually had a guy, a listener sent me, because we were talking about this spending bill that the Democrats have been trying to shove through, where they're threatening to close off the Iraq budget and so forth, and I had a listener actually send me a really good question about this.
Oh, great, good.
And let me see here. He says, I have a question for Lisa on the Hill. When referring to how Democrats may block funding for the war in Iraq, President Bush often uses a talking point along the lines that it will put our troops in harm's way. He says, to me, this implies that Bush will continue the war in Iraq with or without funding, even if it means that it gets down to foxholes and bayonets. He says, and this is a great question, I never thought about this. He says, is this a huge bluff? Does anybody really think that he would not give the order to leave if the Democrats stopped funding the war? That's a really, I'd never thought about that. Bush constantly says, you can't stop funding for the war because it would put our troops in harm's way. Well, if they just did it anyway, they said, well, look, we're doing it, and they just closed the purse, would he possibly have the stones just to leave the troops there with no money?
I think she might have told you that story about Teddy Roosevelt. And when he wanted to, you know, he loved the Navy, and he wanted to take the Navy around the world and kind of in this goodwill show-off tour about, you know, look at our big, great, shiny boats. But Congress didn't want to fund the money. This is a true story. They said, you know, that's a waste of money. We don't want to spend that. So what Teddy Roosevelt did in his capacity as commander-in-chief is he sent the ships approximately halfway around the world on the fuel that they had or the whatever resources they had. And then he said to Congress, well, we need funding to bring them back, or else they're going to be out there.
Right.
So this kind of showdown happens, not all the time, but I think it happens probably in the term of each president at least once. And this is the major one for the president. That's exactly what it is. Who here is bluffing? This, you know, this is a footloose tractor race. I don't know if anybody's got the shoelace stuck around the brake pedal or whatever was going on in that movie, but it really is true that neither side knows. I guess you can insert the word cojones here. Who has the cojones to stick with their plan? Who is going to call each other's bluff? Right now, what's going to happen over the next 2 weeks? The Democrats did pass in the Senate that bill. So now both the House and the Senate have passed timetables for withdrawal. This is a major moment in the Iraq war. And the question is, as the House and the Senate come together, no one's told me this, but this is my theory here. The Senate bill has a withdrawal date of April of next year.
Right.
The House bill has September of next year. The game that these guys are playing here, and they're alluding to it, is to negotiate with the White House. They're saying, look, we're going to craft a bill that will have a withdrawal date between these two. Maybe you can pick one, you know, maybe.
Right.
And then we'll put that language in our bill, and you can sign it. But the president right now is still saying, no deal, no deal. But the Democrats are getting more momentum. That is the problem for the president. And it's not in huge numbers, but day by day, they're getting in more and more strength. And so the question is, will he deal or will he just veto, and that will delay funding? You're going to hear about the delays in funding now. The president will say, our troops need this money by April 15th, or else we're going to have to cut back on what we're spending. So right there, your listener might have his question answered to see if the president does in fact cut back in what goes out to the troops if we don't get this money passed. So there are a lot of there are a lot of little toy figures on this table and in this strategy.
I mean, it's an interesting scenario, and obviously nobody wants to see anybody put in harm's way.
Right.
But it is sort of in the abstract. I am, you know, intrigued by this idea of the irresistible force and the immovable object. And they really do, Congress and the President really do seem to be on a collision course. And I will say this, as much as I'm always lambasting the Democrats as being useless, that they do seem to have this one point down recently, and I don't know, this is sort of what Howard Dean, his sort of momentary genius on this, where he just picked one point, which is the Iraq War, and just hammered it constantly. He just did one, and he never deviated. Every day, all day, that's all he was talking about.
Right.
And somebody has clearly told the Democrats, that's what they got to do. You can't try to solve every problem. You got to pick one thing. And, you know, and you just got to, it's like, you know, you got to pick one thing, you got to define it real narrowly, and you got to hit it every day, every time a microphone is on, every time a camera gets pointed at you. And that seems to be the one thing they're doing right.
Well, the president, I mean, what's interesting is that when the Iraq War started, you know, there was a lot of optimism and there was a lot of feeling of power at the White House and a lot of feeling that they were using their power for some greater purpose, you know, or maybe even living out a greater fate that this administration might have felt that it had. But what's so amazing is during that time, during those first 2 years, they made so many decisions that laid the groundwork long-term for Democrats that made their job so much easier. The whole weapons of mass destruction,
right.
You can start there. The looting in Baghdad, they didn't have enough security. You can go down the list. And it was all of those small day-to-day decisions that they, I think you could, a lot of people call them arrogant, but you could certainly say they overlooked. They admit that they did not consider these things as much as they should have, or they rushed into, however you want to interpret it. But all of those little decisions now, the Democrats have, you know, have turned into incredibly fertile ground. The American population is so unhappy because those little decisions have led to really difficult and bloody situations in Iraq.
It is sort of perversely satisfying that the Republicans in this, just because I'm a big fan of things that are just sort of Shakespearean in nature, and it is satisfying that the Republicans really may have sown the seeds of their own undoing by this. They may be hoisted by their own petard, as they say.
I think that is, you know, that's what, you know, I think that the Iraq War didn't have to play out this way. I think that there are a lot of ways they could, of course, you know, you can talk about the reasons for going to war, whether we should have altogether, that's a different argument. But I think on the ground, it did not have to play out this way. It could have been worse, but it certainly could have been better, and everyone on all sides admits that.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I'm glad you survived the correspondence dinner last night. I'm sure we are. You here tomorrow, or is it Constantine?
No, it's me, baby. I'll be here.
All right, we'll talk to you tomorrow, Lisa. As always, enjoy your afternoon. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you much.
Lisa Goddard, ladies and gentlemen, on the Hill. Fantastic. Excellent. Ryan, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hey.
Hey, Rick.
What's up?
I just wanted to make the comment that Lisa got a couple more points on my book by not only referencing the movie Footloose, but then saying cojones twice.
Totally.
In the same sentence.
And when she said the Footloose thing, I could immediately see her tote board going up with the audience. You know what I mean? The scoreboard just went up like 5 more points there. No, I'm with you on that, my brother.
There's one more reason to turn on the Rick Emerson Show.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Thank you, Ryan.
That's Ryan.
No, I knew that. And I don't think she throws those things out to pander either. I think she really is.
No, I don't think she could find another word for it. So that's.
It's cojones.
That's her lexicon.
And she's a Footloose fan. One of these two calls, then we'll break. Lester, hi. Lester? I barely knew her. All right. I'm just going to get a pre-recorded soundbite that just says, I barely knew her, and then I'm in the computer voice. Somebody, please now, somebody to be sending me that one generic computer voice from all the 1980s films, just saying, like, I barely knew her. That'd be funny, because I could be like, Lester, I barely knew her. That's hilarious. That's where the soul of comedy is right there. Oh, is this, all right, hold on a second. Well, let's,
One big fiesta for illegal aliens and homosexuals.
Hi, George.
Hey, Rick. Hey, Sarah, congratulations on your new locale, by the way.
Thank you. I sign it tomorrow, so.
You deserve it.
So you'll be peering in your window before you know it.
So true. Rick, I just wanted to thank you so deeply from the bottom of my heart for turning me on to Everybody's Garden Center at 519 Southeast Main.
Thank you, sir.
Just got back from my third visit there yesterday, and I dropped about $70 on containers and potting soil. And I made sure that that they knew that we all appreciate their support of the Rick Emerson Show.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I hope the AM 970 sales department is listening. Rate hike.
I also I also told them that you told the entire audience not to pet the fish on a regular basis.
No, the fish. Now, let me ask you this. When you go into everybody's, and this is, you know, as I'm just saying, is an observation. When you go in there, it's not shtick. When you go into to everybody's garden center, there's that pond.
Southeast Maine.
Yes, thank you. That pond there. Don't those fish, don't they act like they want to be petted?
Oh, God. It takes every ounce of restraint in my being to not pet those little fish.
Have you been there?
No, I haven't. I ride my bike by there every day.
Tim? Have you been to everybody's garden center?
I have not yet, no.
But come on, I don't garden.
They come one third up out of the water on the rock.
That's what I'm saying. Just to see the fish, though, it's amazing. They're like puppies. It's insane.
You can touch them?
No, but there's a sign saying don't pet the fish. They have to put the sign up because the fish, it's the weirdest thing. They're like
don't
big goldfish.
Pet the fish?
Because they're like big goldfish. They're not weird fish. They're like big goldfish type
things.
They're
beautiful.
They're very beautiful. But the thing is, when you walk by the pond, and it's just, you know, it's like a little pond. It's about knee high. You walk by the pond, and the fish will actually, like, come up, and they'll get out of the water. They'll, like, put themselves up on a rock near you as though they want to be petted. They're like pigeons.
Their mouths are, like, gaping, and they're, like, oh, they're trying to wiggle past each other to get to you?
It's so weird. They're, like, they are like pigeons. They just sort of come up like they want to be your pal. And so they have to be thinking, like, don't pet the fish. It's the weirdest thing, yeah.
They're the most amazing metallic colors. I mean, they're not just goldfish. They're, like, yellow goldfish.
The titanium fish.
Insanely beautiful fish. And, I just wanted to also mention that they have, I'm big into agriculture, and I've been all over looking at the various wholesale places, and everybody's garden center has prices and quality and selection second to none.
We just tape this and play this back later the next time I have a live read. Fantastic.
You can reach them at 231-1582, that's 503-231-1582, and I'm very, very impressed with their helpful and knowledgeable staff as well. So thank you. I mean, I found products there I couldn't find anywhere else.
Sarah, did I have a live read coming up for everybody's garden center today?
You actually did.
Let's just check that off. And
well, thank you, Rick.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, one, I don't have a name for the listener party, but I thought if you're going to have a band, you could have a guy that was dressed like Pee Wee Herman. And, you know, he could be Andy, Dan, and the Gut Shot Clowns. That's my band name.
You were so strong there at the beginning. You started off really strong.
I knew, you know, look, you got to push it, right?
Yes.
What was that address again, John?
What was the address?
That's 519 Southeast Maine.
Thank you, George.
Everybody's Garden Center.
God bless you. God bless you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. That's George and Wilson. Fantastic. Take a break. Back with Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth for the AM 970 Noon News Hour. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid States Radio. Stop.